Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
What's up, y'all? Really excited to share today's conversation with you for a number of reasons. Not only is my guest a major champion and a former world number one, he is also my favorite player not named Tiger growing up, Adam Scott. I covered a lot with Adam in this interview, everything from the evolution of equipment since his career began to his best and boldest dressers on tour. And he also lists his top five major venues he's played. So here it is, my chat with Adam Scott. Well, Adam Scott, thank you for joining the Smiley Show. Man, you were probably my favorite player growing up. I mean, I think the common answer is that Tiger Woods was everybody's favorite player, but you really were. Like, if you'd have gone to my like third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, like who was your favorite golfer besides Tiger Woods, I would write your name down. So for me, when I got on tour and you and I got paired together, it was a pretty cool deal for me to play with you. I'm sure for you, it's probably odd having that said to you, but for me, you were definitely an idol of mine.
Well, thanks very much for having me on the show and for those nice words. And definitely just got a reality check on how old I am, that's for sure.
No. It's, yeah. But it's, you age like fine wine, like your golf swing. And I think when I was a kid and growing up, it was either like the V1, kind of when we were coming up, the technology still wasn't what it is now. But they had V1 where they could use tour models to kind of show side-by-side swings. Mm-hmm. And it was either every coach I went to either had Tiger Woods' swing or your swing as we compared like my 13-year-old golf swing to yours, which is probably not fair to myself, to yours at the time. But still, did you feel like you had a prototypical perfect golf swing, or were like during the early 2000s or for you, were there other swing role models that you were looking at?
I think, you know, Tiger 2000 swing was just so crazy good. Like, it's like the dream swing for everybody. And, you know, that was around that time. It was such an influential time in my career. You know, I was around 19 and 20 and trying to get on tour and make it. And I kind of had the Tiger rhythm, and then I started seeing Butch, and he put the positions a little nicer the way he does, and all very naturally kind of fell in a really similar kind of spot. I still think Tiger's 2000 swing is the best swing, but and much better than mine was. But you know, I don't know. I think I got natural good sound fundamentals from my dad early on, and.
Right.
And a lot of my golf swing evolution was really just copying other guys. Like, so Greg Norman was the number one golfer when I was in my early teens, and he was an Australian icon. And, you know, I liked his aggressive play, you know, the way he swung at the driver, that was appealing. And I copied that, and I had the big whiplash off the back as a as a young kid playing.
We all did.
Yeah. And then, you know, it morphed a little as Tiger came on the scene. Everyone tried to swing like Tiger, and I did too. And you know, but since then I've had lots of different kind of I look at rhythm more than anything now when I think of other people's swings. And I've looked at Ernie Els' rhythm a lot at times, Fred Couples, Tom Watson, NB Park is another one that I like to look at. Like she's so deliberate off the ball, and I get a bit too quick sometimes. So I like to imagine that kind of rhythm. So I've looked at lots of swings, but I've never really tried to change the positions of my swing too much.
Yeah. So you've never had a period during your entire career. I mean, you're a model of consistency. Did you ever have times where like, you know what, if I go try this, maybe I can hit a different ball flight or catch another 10, 15 yards. Did you ever have challenges like that in your career where you try to change your golf swing at all?
I've definitely had challenges like everyone. I feel like if you've played golf long enough, you know, you find yourself in some spots where you're like, I don't know how I'm going to play good again. And then it's when you're playing good, you're like, how easy is this game? And you're just loving it. But I've had moments with the golf swing for sure. I think, you know, there are moments every week actually, but like big moments where I'm really struggling was kind of in 2009. It started getting a little bent out of shape. My posture got pretty poor for me, and the swing got really rounded, a bit laid off the club at the top, and incredibly shallow coming in. And it was also around a time when spin really started coming off the golf ball hard. Spin was coming out of drivers hard, and I really couldn't keep the ball in the air because it was like such a shallow inside approach, and I was just really struggling with any consistency at all in my ball flight. And I actually changed coach at the end of that year to Brad Malone, who's still my coach today. And we kind of reworked some of those fundamentals to get me back on track. So in 2009 was kind of my biggest struggle with the golf swing.
Yeah, that didn't sound very easy to hit a fade with all the things you just said.
It was all over the place. I could hit every shot, just not the one I wanted.
Well, you kind of mentioned talking about the golf ball or just equipment in general changing during that time. So from the beginning of your career versus now, you know, especially with this ball rollback debate, you know, where do you kind of stand on where the equipment was at the beginning kind of your career and where it is now?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing because now, you know, I'm probably the last of the guys who turned pro using a Ballada, like a wound golf ball. And toward the end of my first year as a pro, the Pro V1 was introduced, and that was really kind of a revolutionary ball. And all the other manufacturers spent a few years trying to catch up to where the Pro V1 was. But that was a huge advantage if you were a titleist player at that time when the Pro V1 came out, because it was clearly, you know, a better golf ball. And, you know, the distance thing started happening, I guess, around that time. Much more calmly, I think, for quite a few years. And then I think over the last 10 years, it's really kind of exploded. And we've seen a few guys push the limits a few times, you know, going back to Rory kind of in 13 and 14, all of a sudden, you know, bulked up with speed and launching drivers to Bryson a few years ago when he went crazy and just pushed it even further. And, you know, I also see the younger kids and Gordon Sargent's probably the best example, who's, they have this easy speed in the 190s, which is so wild.
It's crazy.
You know, and I think it's awesome because like the athlete, we're becoming better athletes, and you know, we shouldn't stop that. The kind of golf romantic in me likes the idea of bringing it back. I'm just not sure like throwing a blanket just on the golf ball is the way to do it, and I don't really love the idea of bifurcating either. You know, we could have an hour conversation just on this, throwing ideas around, but you know, I think there's something to the driver head size. It's not just the ball that goes long. It's other things that allow us to, that we've chased distance. You know, tees going way back is asking us to hit it further, and guys have found ways to do that. So, you know, it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. But of course, we can't have 800-yard holes. We got to stop somewhere.
I'm kind of with you on this size of the driver head. Maybe the golf ball would be something to look at changing as well, but I'm with you on a golf course that, you know, if there's so many courses now where guys just like, you know what, I'm just going to hit driver, go find it, where the hole is not designed for it. And so I think that's the beauty of golf that you're kind of speaking of, and the artistry that it takes to get around golf courses. That's kind of just gone. It's just the stats say hit driver and you just go find it and hit another one.
Yeah. I feel like more than the golf ball, the biggest fundamental change in the game since I've been a pro, which is getting back to your question, is traditionally the driver's been the hardest club to hit in the bag, and now it's the most forgiving. And that's the biggest like evolutionary change in the golf bag to me, out of the equipment. The ball's a ball, but the driver went from the hardest club to hit to now the most forgiving and the go-to club for guys if they're nervous. You know, the penalty for missing a driver just isn't high enough anymore, in my opinion, at the top level. And, you know, I'd like to maybe address that first and see what knock-on effects that has. You know, I don't know, if guys want to swing it at 130 with a tiny driver head, then good luck.
Well, Adam, you cracked the top 100 in the world for the first time exactly 22 years ago. And that was July 15th, 2001. So, you know, only a couple more days away. So that there's a little fun fact nugget, but you've never fallen out of the top 100 since. I mean, what do you credit for your longevity?
You know, I've been lucky with, you know, no real injuries, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had a good kind of team of different people over the years now, you know, as things change, your team changes, but I've had good people around me, you know, with similar principles, I think, the whole time, keeping me physically well. And, I think generally, for the most of my career, I've kind of really, really put my mind to playing top level golf, and I've been really disciplined with myself. So, most of the time I've been getting good advice to you know, match up with some talent that I have, which is some good decisions along the way for sure. And wanting to play hard.
How many years did you work with Butch Harmon?
I worked with Butch for the better part of 10 years. Yeah.
I'm curious. Everybody always kind of refers to him more as a mental coach and really gives guys positivity and confidence. And the answer you just gave made me think how many talented players that have been on the PGA Tour that haven't had the level of consistency, that maybe had the same physical gifts, but weren't able to do what you've done. And how much do you credit your mental game and just like that attitude and confidence of setting your mind to, hey, I'm going to achieve this and I'm going to go do it year in, year out. And it's not easy to do, but you were able to do it.
Yeah, I think as good as Butch is at seeing the golf swing and seeing a ball flight and being able to communicate that as a golf teacher, he was a great mental coach for me. He played the tour when he was younger. He'd worked with the best. You know, he'd worked a bit with Seve. He'd worked a lot with Norman, who is a dominant number one player. And then, of course, working with Tiger. He'd seen so much. And he got to, you know, at the time, I don't think I realized as it was coming in exactly what he was saying. But as I look back on it now, I definitely adopted bits of that later on, even as motivation to work harder, things like that. You know, Butch and I personalities are a little bit different, and he'd push me sometimes in ways that I maybe didn't quite get straight away, but I eventually got there. And I think I got a lot out of talk, you know, as much as he taught me golf, we talked golf, and that's very similar with Brad as well, who I've worked with for the last 10 or 12 years. You know, I feel like at this point in my career, I'm not trying to move the swing around or anything. I need someone to make sure it's looking pretty good. And then I need someone to talk golf with, you know, that understands kind of my game and what's going on. And we can get to kind of decide if my three wood's not looking good, he understands what I'm saying and we can make a good decision together.
It's so important. And so many junior golfers or college golfers that go to all these coaches and they try to communicate to these coaches, but they don't have the same verbiage. They don't know how to communicate to a coach and speak the same language. You have to be able to talk to your coach and be able for y'all to understand what you're talking about, or it's never going to work. I've had relationships like that in coaching, and you're trying to make sense of what they're talking about. And for those of you that are listening, it's like, crap, I don't know what my coach is talking about. He just sounds smart. It's probably not the best fit.
Yeah, exactly. If it's not working in a couple shots, or you guys are talking around in circles for a while, it's probably never going to get too far. There's so much info out there that, you know, you got to be careful what you do with it. And I think, you know, what I appreciate a lot about my coach at the moment is, you know, he lets me rely on my instinct a lot. I've played a lot of golf at a very high level for a long time. I mean, my gut instinct should be pretty good. Like, let's follow that first. Let's go down that path. And we know where our home base is too. So if we start going down a path and it's wrong, we can get back quick and sort ourselves out.
Yeah, maybe take a week or two, but you'll find your way back. And you talked about that high level golf. I mean, you were world number one from May 2014 to August 2014. You know, for you, where would you rank that as far as your career achievements, just reaching number one in the world?
Yeah, I think it's way up there, really. Like, it's childhood dream stuff. You know, I had that, you know, in my mind as a kid, practicing at home, and you're trying to be world number one day. And it was really, you know, my dreams were kind of crushed as I turned pro. Like, this Tiger Woods just dominated this position for over a decade, really, as I turned pro. And I know Vijay made it to number one in that time. I'm trying to think if anyone else did. Maybe not in the first decade I was a pro. But, you know, like, I gave up on it pretty much. You know, like, that was never going to happen. And I started playing good after 09, and I pushed pretty hard for a few years there. That was like my real sweet spot, where I did a lot of things right for quite a while, and then I finally got there. And I mean, it is incredible to go to the course as the world number
one
player.
It's pretty cool, right?
I mean, it's incredible.
What was the pressure like of having the number one? Like, when you got there, was it as satisfying as I would make it to myself? Like, if I was the number one player in the world, is it just kind of just more of a confidence booster more than anything?
Yeah, it was. It was incredibly satisfying. I really didn't put pressure on myself to kind of stay there. I never really felt like the target was on my back. There was a ton of guys that could get to number one any week that I was number one. So, you know, it wasn't, maybe I should have put a bit more pressure and played better for longer, but, you know, I took the number one spot from Tiger. That was cool.
Sick.
And I wasn't playing that week. I was at home, you know, so I entered the next tournament. Yeah. So I entered the next tournament just to make sure I at least played once as world number one. Cause if I took it off,
where was
I
it?
Could have lost it. Colonial.
Okay.
And I won the tournament. So that was cool.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. So then I managed to hang on to it for like 7 or 8 weeks or something. And Rory went on a heater that summer and whipped right by me. But, you know, it is really like way up there in career achievements. And I probably thought I was going to get back there, but it does seem like it's a long way off right now.
Well, we know you have the game to eventually do it if you get on that little hot run. But one of the things that I've kind of noticed really since the beginning of your career, everybody always talks about your golf swing, but really the putter. You know, I loved your stroke with the short blade, the Scotty Cameron. I think a lot, Jordan Spieth modeled your Scotty Cameron. He modeled it after your putter. Mm-hmm. He told us that in an interview earlier on our podcast. But you've switched to the broom stick over the years. And was it weird showing up the first time with the broomstick? Because I feel like you were one of the first guys to kind of get into the broomstick. It's just so many guys are doing it now, but at the time, where you're just like, I got to try something different.
Yeah, it was just out of, you know, I was a good putter with the short putter for sure. Like,
yeah, stats showed it too.
Like I led strokes game putting early on in that stat or whenever that was around and stuff. But I became kind of streaky, and it became very frustrating. It was either really good or really terrible, and that's a tough spot to be out on tour, not knowing what's going to show up any given week. And after a couple years of like really streaky putting, I just said, I'm going to try something completely new. And my coach, Brad, he went and bought a broomstick from a golf shop, and we went on the putting green in the backyard in Australia. And I started this thing.
Did you just make everything?
Yeah, it just went in. And and we said, all right, we got to give this a go. And I think I was like kind of a young guy showing up with a broomstick was pretty odd. I think Tim Clark was probably the, you know, we were both young back then, but he was my buddy, and he was doing it. And I showed up with it, and I think people were rolling their eyes, shaking their heads, kind of stuff. But I got results pretty quick, and I think about my fourth event with it, I finished second at the Masters, and you know, it definitely had merit after that.
I mean, my dad uses the broomstick, and he makes everything. So there's definitely I've tried to use it. It's not comfortable to me, but just whatever's comfortable with the putter. And it seems like you figured something out, and I like watching you with the broomstick. But as far as Australia, I played the Aussie Open and the Aussie PGA, and I was corrected very quickly that it's not Australia, it's Australia. It's no AUS.
Australia, mate.
So I got corrected very quick on that. But, you know, I'm curious with all this talks about the global tour that's being floated around and Australia really being a golf hotbed. You know, where does Australia fit for you in what hopefully would potentially be a global tour?
Yeah, it's hard to know how everything is going to pan out. I think the idea of a global tour sounds great. I don't know logistically how it's really going to work the best for everybody. You know, things have been pretty comfortable in the United States for a lot of guys for a long time, including myself. And like with three of the majors focused there and that style of golf, I think it'd be hard to see how the global tour all works out. But Australia is a golfing nation for sure. And we have this area in Melbourne with 10 of the best golf courses in the world, and I'm not really exaggerating in saying that. And they love sport down there. And playing in the Sandbelt is really, really special. It's like playing links golf. It's right. Sandbelt golf. It's a certain style of golf. And it'd be amazing to showcase that with the great players all the time. We've had President's Cups down there, and you've played a couple of events. And and I think guys are generally more interested like these days to go and experience a little bit more, which is fantastic. So, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to have, you know, big tournaments year after year down there, but if we can continue to encourage like some top players to come down and experience that, I know they're going to have a good time in Australia, and I know they'll enjoy the course and they'll be appreciated. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I got to watch a little bit of the LIV golf event at Adelaide. And
yeah,
to me, it looked like their most successful event that they've had. And I think it had everything to do with the Australian fans. I think it had everything to do with the golf community and the fact that they were going to show up regardless of who's playing. It's like, we just want to see top level golf. And I think that's what we saw at that event and what we could see if there were more global events or PGA Tour events throughout Australia.
Yeah, there's no doubt like the global market's been starved of big events. You know, the US has certainly dominated that. The tour's had a few events in Asia, but maybe hasn't hit all the spots with all the big names going. Mm-hmm. You know, it's tough time of year, potentially guys are trying to take a break and not travel and things like that. So it shows that that market's starved, and, you know, getting the balance right is maybe something that the world of professional golf can do going forward if some kind of deal takes place.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see what's going to eventually happen. Cause I, like I said, I loved playing the Aussie Open and the Aussie PGA, but really those weren't on this. Those aren't considered Sandbelt golf courses, correct? Where I played the Gold Coast and Sydney.
No, they're not.
They'll be Melbourne, right?
Yeah. Down in Melbourne is the Sandbelt. And, you know, we had the Aussie Open down at Victoria Golf Club last year, which was fantastic. Nice. It's back in Sydney this year. But it would be great to see those events get down to the Sandbelt more and showcase.
Yeah, I think I played on a Nicholas course. It was like the Australian Golf Club.
The Australian. Yeah, that's a really nice club.
I loved it. It was like this is US golf, man. I was like, this is me.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's imperfect. It's like one of our best conditioned golf courses too. And actually the Aussie Open's there this year. So
yeah, there you go. When I was there, the fires were really bad. So there was like a ton of smoke.
Right. I remember that. Yeah. I was there. Yeah. Couldn't see down the fairway. It was crazy.
I think a lot of people pay attention to what you're wearing while you're walking down the fairways. I think you've been one of the best dressed players since you've been on the PGA Tour. I think you probably take pride in it, as you should, because I feel like you're a kind of a trendsetter, but you also know what not to wear in the same sense. You started,
I think,
out
I
your
learned career... that I learned that.
Well, you started your did you start your career with Burberry?
Pretty much, yep, that's right.
And then now you're with
Uniqlo.
And yeah, kind of different styles. Burberry, like I remember you wearing a lot more pattern type stuff. And it seems like now you wear more muted tones and kind of just small little details, it seems like, that you kind of add to an outfit. Like where are you on fashion when you came out on tour and where you are now?
Probably age appropriate. Smiley is the best answer. I could dig through like some Google image searches and find some terrible things that I've worn. But, you know, I've been lucky with all my sponsors, I feel, but certainly with Uniqlo, they've been great to work with the last 10 years. And the thing I like about their philosophy is it's like life wear. It's not just golf clothes. You know, you decide what you want to wear it for. It's really versatile stuff and it's affordable as well, which I like, which is, you know, something that a lot of areas of the game is trying to work with, because, you know, golf has that kind of stigma of being elitist and that. And I think we're knocking down a lot of barriers just generally as a whole on that, doing a good job with that. And I like the fact that the clothes I wear are affordable for most, which is cool. And, you know, you explained it dead right. I mean, it's fairly muted. It's fairly solid. I wear a lot of solids. It's pretty hard to go wrong with that. So, you know, somehow I get away with not messing it up too much.
Nobody's going to mistake Adam Scott and Victor Hovland in a major championship currently.
No, not at the moment. No.
Well, I got two fashion questions that I want to hear if this is ever in or if it's out for you. Mm-hmm. Is a white belt ever allowed?
I think it's out for me now. I mean, I've worn a white belt, so I'm guilty.
It's always been out for me.
Yeah, I think it's out now. I think I don't know when that was, 15 or more years ago, maybe, but I think it's out.
All right, talk to me about the joggers.
I've worn them too, but that was like, it felt like a seasonal thing for me, joggers. So
I mean, they're still out and about.
I know. It feels like that season's been 6 years now, and maybe it should be out too. I don't think I'll be back in joggers again.
Okay. What about pleated pants? Is that something that you can get behind?
Yeah. So I think I had one pleat in my trousers at the USPGA this year. So,
ooh.
You know, it's a bit of a fashion thing for sure. I like it. I like that. I mean, I like that. When you look at old photos of Hogan and stuff, even old ones of Arnold Palmer, I like that style, that silhouette with a bit bigger trousers and a pleat and stuff like that. You know, it looked like it fit in those times, but we've been pretty pretty straight-legged for a while now.
I'll tell you what, you're probably going to see me out at the Scottish Open this week. You're like, is that SK in the fairways wearing pleated pants?
Yeah.
trying to fit this little trend that Adam said this could hit.
Yeah. I like the pleat. I think it's definitely in the fashion world is what they tell me. So, you know, I'm trying to pull it off.
Love it. Well, you don't have to give us the worst dress players unless you'd like, but is there any other best dress players that you can think of on tour that come to mind? But you could also give us a worst if you're just kind of thinking, oh God, that guy, he needs to figure it out.
We'll keep it positive at the moment. Okay. I got to give Keith Mitchell props for kind of putting a bit of style out there. He's got some trousers and, you know
his nickname, right?
Style. No, go on.
They call him Cashmere Keith.
Oh yeah. He's got the cashmere sweater. Yeah. He's got like the terry toweling visor going as well. I don't know if you've noticed that detail, but.
Oh yeah.
He's working at it. And look, I give him props for that. I think he looks pretty good out there.
Keith is smiling right now so big and he doesn't even know it. He's going to absolutely love that. Yeah. It's going to be stuff. Amazing. Any other guys?
I don't spend too much time.
I just checking
the locker room out, but let's see. Vic, you know, he's brave. Let's call Victor Hovland brave.
Okay. We'll use, instead of worse, we'll just use, you know, paid and brave.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
Oh man. All right. So how about this? So you're going to be playing in your 91st major championship in next week at the Open Championship. Is that just crazy to think about? 91 majors?
Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it? Really?
You've gotten to see pretty much all some of the best golf courses around the world, playing some of, you know, the best golf courses that you would ever want to have a competition on. And I'm actually curious, what would be your top five major venues? Ooh. You've played 91 of them. You got to have a pretty good feel.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Look, I mean, I have to put Augusta
right
in there, of course. You know, we go there every year. So, but it is truly a special tournament. And I think of all the majors, it's the one that kind of transcends golf. You know, it has some appeal outside the game of golf, certainly into the sports world. It captures that sports audience. But, you know, I remember growing up as a kid and, you know, Monday morning would be the final round of the Masters down there. And like when an Aussie was in contention, the whole nation would be stopping. Like you could, the teacher, if they'd let you watch it at school on Monday morning kind of thing.
So had to make it that much more special for you when you won, knowing what it's like growing up watching the Masters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wasn't thinking of it at the time, obviously, but I've seen some cool clips that people sent me of, like, there were guys doing radio shows in the morning, not covering the Masters at all, but they're watching the TV and they're jumping out of their chairs while they're interviewing someone else and stuff like this going on. So there was some cool stuff happening. The Masters for sure at Augusta, that course. As far as the Open Championship goes, I'd say Muirfield is my favorite track in the Open. Mm. And then you've got to put St. Andrews in there because of the atmosphere. Yeah.
So there's three of them. We got two more.
That's three. Two more. I really love Shinnecock Hills Golf Course. I've played two US Opens there, and they've both been pretty brutal because, you know, the green situation that we've had there.
Potentially the best Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is what you're telling me.
Yeah, for sure. Amazing. And then it's been a bit of a disaster Thursday through Sunday, but I love Shinnecock and I'd put Winged Foot in there as well. You know, I just think that is a tough test.
You just know the best player is going to end up being at the top of the board that week. Is that kind of why?
Yeah, generally. I mean, I've skipped over Pebble Beach, and that's pretty rough. There are a lot of good ones. And the sneaky good one, I think, that might surprise people, I think Olympic Club is a good venue for a major championship. I think that was great.
That's a great answer. I think a lot of people will like that because it's similar to like a Marion in the fact that it's not a big boy golf course. It requires you to play a different and really a style that has to, you know, shot shapes off the tees, a lot of different shots. Yeah. So that's, I think that's what you're kind of referring to there.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. It asks you to play some shots around there, which a lot of these newer venues, you know, they're big tracks and it's send it down there and, you know, a slight draw or a slight fade, it's still okay. Whereas at Olympic, you know, you've got to know which way it's going.
Yeah. That I think of that tee shot, I think it's number 16, that dogleg left. And yeah. I'm sitting here thinking in my head, I don't know how I'm not going to hit those trees right off the bat. Because they look like they're hanging on top of the tee. You've got to turn something.
Yeah. It's intimidating. You know, you've got it asks the question of you, you know, to move it around a little bit. And I kind of like that. And where else? Oh, that's the other one. I saw Riviera's getting the US Open in like 2031 or something. Oh,
you're a big Riv guy too. You always play good there.
Yeah. So I'm kind of motivated to see if I can keep it together and somehow squeeze into that in however many years that is.
Oh man. I think the first PGA Tour event I went to was with my dad at Riviera and we watched you play all round. So mm-hmm. I don't know what year that would have been, but I'm sure you're wearing pleated pants out there and looked great and played well.
Probably. Yeah. Riv's kind of my spot. That's for sure. I love Riv.
It's so good. Oh, I want to getting back to the Masters real quick. Would you say that win was your biggest career achievement to this point? If not that, what would it have been?
No, it has to be. I mean, it's really it's something else. I feel like, you know, Trevor Immelman and I are pretty good mates and he won the Masters in 08 and like, he still gets a flag sent to him every week to sign from winning. It is truly special. And like everywhere you go, people know about the green jacket, and wonder where it is and what you do with it. It's like I said, it's one of those tournaments that transcends the game and, It is probably if I happen to win another major, you know, I just don't know how it'll be. It'll be special, but winning the Masters is something else.
What are we looking out for at Royal Liverpool? You've had some success at that golf course. I believe you finished top 10 twice, but one that's not typically that we're used to seeing at Hoylake. So what are we looking for there?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting course for guys that haven't been there before, that weren't at the 14 was the last time we were there, because it's a tough course to kind of overpower, that you can't really cut corners. I don't think. I hear there's a bit of rough around, so you're going to have to kind of strategize your way around and execute. And, you know, that's not our strong suit necessarily on tour now. So I think what's going to be interesting is to watch if guys adapt quick enough to kind of scale back and play the course, let the course come to them rather than overpower the golf course.
Well, because I saw the scores were pretty low there. So in my head, I'm thinking, oh, it must be one where they can kind of overpower it. But that's a little different answer than I was expecting.
I think Rory did a pretty good job of overpowering it last time. You know, he was in that, you know, the like his first time he really started sending it after hitting the gym, and it rained a lot that week, so it was soft and I think you could get away with it. So it'll be condition dependent, like every Open for sure, but I just feel like most of the time on these good links courses that aren't like wide open, you've kind of got to let the course come to you. You just get it down mm-hmm. there and then you hit a shot and like the contours work it into the right spot if you've hit a good shot. And I'm sure you can do okay kind of bombing it around, hacking it around. But I think if you can execute and play the course how it's intended, I think you'll end up with a better score. Like Tiger hit one driver there in 06.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Six.
It was baked out too, right?
It was super baked out. I don't think it's going to be that dry, but it'll be somewhere in between. You know, I think we'll probably have to adapt a little bit from our usual kind of bomb and gouge mentality.
Yeah, I was looking at that leaderboard, seeing Rory and Tiger win, but then you finishing top 10 twice, and then Jim Furyk was the other guy that had some success there. So that's kind of that guy who's a plotter, lets the course come to him. So be interested to see next week at Royal Liverpool. It's going to be I'm sure a great test. And as we finish here, I'm a recent dad. My producer, Charlie Hume, is also a dad as well, sitting at Walker's about 8-9 months or so. And Anna Carter's sitting at around 6 months. So first off, do you remember that time of babies, and do you have any advice for us as we kind of move on in fatherhood?
Yeah. I think new babies is just an amazing time. And like when any of my buddies have a kid now, I just tell them to enjoy that new baby phase. I think it might be the best and probably the easiest time for a dad. I'm sure the moms don't want to hear that, but like
it seems gets that way in our house.
It gets way more intense as the kids get bigger, and every day is, you know, is such a fun challenge to have with them and watch them, you know, the growth and the learning and everything in those early years is just incredible. So, you know, we're all busy doing what we're doing, but, you know, to give yourself a little bit of time each day to really be present. You know, if I could tell myself, I wish I could have been there a little bit more, you know, and I think that's really valuable. And I try and do that more now, even
that's
though
great advice.
My kids are a little bit older, but I would say, even if it's just an extra 15 minutes a day to just be really with them and enjoy that and observe their growth, I think those early years are just incredible.
Well, it's nice too, but you kind of grew up in an age where these phones weren't quite as addicting as they are now in social media. I wish my phone sometimes was just punted in the trash can and that I can be present like you're talking about a little bit more. Yeah. That's great advice. Going to definitely stick that in Charlie and I's back pocket as we definitely try to be as good a dad as we possibly can be. But
I'm sure, man, you guys will be just fine.
Yeah, we're hanging in there. Well, so Adam, Thank you, man. You're obviously I'm always been a big fan of yours, but thank you for joining the show, and hopefully get to watch you play some good golf this week and next week over here in Scotland. And I guess next week's England. Did we go from Scotland?
Next
England?
Week's England. Right? Yeah, we're moving.
I got to get my bearings right. You see, that's I'm driving. I'm now driving on the other side of the road, the right side of the steering wheel. I'm just all switched up right now. I got to kind of recalibrate.
I'm hoping you make it to next week if you're driving over here.
Yeah, seriously, man. Well, good I appreciate luck. It. Play well this week, buddy.
No worries. Thanks so much. I'll see you out there.
Love chatting with Adam, and love that he dropped some dad wisdom on us on the way out. Hope to see him play well again at Hoy Lake this coming week. That's all for today's show. We'll be back here on Monday with a recap of not only the Scottish Open, but another wild week in golf with a Senate hearing. Thanks for listening. See you then. The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.